Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Working Overtime, the bi-weekly advised focus reels to Working's Instagram. I'm your host, June Thomas.
And I am your other host, Isaac Butler. And having never been on Instagram, I have no idea what June is talking about. June, let's set aside cryptic social media references that everyone other than me gets. And instead, why don't you tell me what we're talking about today?
Well, Isaac, of late, I've been doing a lot of thinking about accountability and the role of that concept in the creative process. I have to tell you, it came into my head when I was watching YouTube, which I do a lot of, and a couple of the study tubers I watch, that is people who devote their YouTube channels to showing themselves studying or working on their PhD dissertations, logged on to accountability sessions. Now, for one of them, I know, it actually kind of...
I just wish our, you know, this is an audio podcaster, so our listeners cannot see the look that both our producer Kevin and I are giving you right now, which is one of just like, what the fuck? You could have easily been like, well, as you know, I'm a tentacle creature from the planet Zebulon. And you would have gotten like a very similar look from the two of us.
I mean, believe me, I'm shocked myself. I have now watched way more study tubing than I ever studied, but it's oddly compelling.
Wait, I'm sorry. I know that yes. We're trying to talk about accountability as an issue in the creative process, but I have to ask you, what do these, is it literally just someone reading and underlining with like their phone camera pointed at them?
There's a lot of like the Pomodoro clock going round and round and round. There's a lot of people just looking at really nice like computer setups as they show you themselves working from different angles. Honestly, though, I truly do find it useful because I never did learn to study. If I had watched these YouTubers before I went to university, I could be a philosophy professor right now instead of whatever it is that we do for a living, whatever this is. So on one of the YouTube channels that I watch, accountability means that a woman in Canada and a person in Germany log on to Zoom at the same time every weekday so they can each work on their dissertations.
Yes.
And for another, it means belonging to an entire organization that has daily sessions where a whole group of members log into Zoom to work silently together. And the idea, I gather, came from PhD students shifting from the part of their program where they were taking classes and writing papers and getting a lot of feedback to the part where they're effectively on their own working on a long lead project with very few check-ins.
It's called being ABD.
Yes, indeed. And some people stay right there. But having a regular date to work with another person seems to have made it easier for them to sit down and work. And I don't know about you, Isaac, but this reminded me a lot of the process of writing a book where there's a period where you're working on the proposal, when you're in a pretty intense consultation with your agent and maybe an editor or a series of editors. And then when you sell your book, you have a year or two or whatever the amount of time is to write it, during which period you have very few, perhaps even no check-ins with anyone about how things are going. And I wonder, did you have struggles making that adjustment, Isaac? Did you feel a need for an accountability buddy?
I'm glad you bring this up because when you look at it from the outside, it's totally bizarre that this is how we chose to structure things. I mean, other than defense contractors, I don't think there's another group where you just like give someone a chunk of money, you know, a briefcase full of doubloons, or in the writer's case, nickels. And then you're like, oh, and by the way, in 2 years, would you please turn in a great work of art? It's totally bizarre. And you're absolutely right. When you're doing the proposal, you're in constant touch with your agent. They're ferrying messages back and forth to the editor about the eventual project. And then all of a sudden, you're just on your own. And it really is the first time that it happens. It really fucks with you. Every writer I know, the first time they sell a book, the fact that all of a sudden they're just on their own to do it. I was lucky. My first book had a co-writer, the great Dan Coyce. And so we were each other's, you know, accountability people.
Yeah.
But I will say that in my case, it's been a little bit easier because I am friends with both my agent and my editor. You know, like a friendship over the past few years has developed. I see them occasionally socially. You know, I'm going to get lunch with my editor in a couple of weeks. And that provides one method of accountability.
Yeah.
But here are the far better ones for me. One, at the end of the day, at the dinner table, either my wife or child is going to turn to me and say, "How was your day?" And I don't like lying to them. And so I'm going to have to give an answer about what I've been doing with myself. Two, I have a therapist, you know, and I'm honest with my therapist. And so if I'm like, actually, I'm not working on the book, I'm blocked or whatever, you know, they're going to know. And number three is giving my work to people for feedback. Because like you have to give it to them to get the feedback. You know what I mean? So I don't have a lot of formal structures for accountability. As you know, I don't have a lot of formal structures for anything. But that's the kind of stuff in my life that's worked well. On this latest one, I have been considering doing like accountability sessions. Like some people on my group chat, my writer group chat, do those. And I've been thinking about asking like, hey, does anyone want to do one? But I haven't done it yet.
Interesting. And I think you're absolutely right that figuring out what to tell your partner, your family, basically, when you're at that stage, which I think I have gotten over, where a lot of the problem is discipline, like that can be incredibly motivational. Like, as you say, you don't want to lie. You don't want to say, well, I was going to work. I had great plans, but, well, you know what I'm like. That's not really where I am right now, but that is incredibly motivational.
Can I ask, like, I learned that discipline in graduate school, right? Because I had just deadlines constantly. Did you learn that discipline by being a staff writer? Is that where it came from? Or have you always had that discipline? Because I used to be a big, like, never turn my homework in, procrastinate a lot. I would do things like, there was one time in eighth grade, I remember this because my parents bring it up all the time, where I wrote the paper and then just, it was done and did not turn it in for like a month.
Oh my God. Wow.
And the teacher literally was like, I should fail you, but this is a really good paper. So I got like a C on it or something.
I was exactly like that. I just was a terrible procrastinator. And for whatever reason, I actually think there were some issues going on. But I was that kind of thing where I just wouldn't do the work. My lying ability was incredible. I remember saying to a professor, I've got it upstairs. Do you want me to just go and get it? I hadn't even started writing. If he'd said yes, what would I have done? Just, I don't know what I would have done. But no, I learned discipline at work. As you said, sometimes you just have no choice. You have deadlines. Do you want to keep this job? Well, there you do. Get disciplined. I think, though, that most creative projects in any genre or any kind of work have that kind of period where you don't have the check-ins that you do from a more structured situation. So, for example, if you are trying to launch a new initiative at work or you're figuring out a new process, you tend not to be having check-ins or doing collaboration. And so I know when I was working on things like that, I would always find, you know, effectively go back to that previous state, you know, which is to say, looking for the dopamine hit of filing a piece or responding to an email instead of doing that work because there was no check-in. And so I didn't have accountability. I think another example that we're probably both very familiar with is when you kind of have a transition in work, when you, for example, if you decide to leave a staff job where you have clear expectations, co-workers you're constantly collaborating with, goals you have to meet, a boss you have to please, to the freelance life where you are responsible for pitching and working unsupervised, and you do have to make that work or you won't eat, but it's still hard and there isn't much accountability. But that reminds me that one very basic form of accountability is meeting deadlines. If you are a freelance writer or a freelance anything, if you can't meet your deadlines, you absolutely cannot succeed. That is the minimum requirement for being an independent contributor to a larger project, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say that in general, that's actually something I'm quite good at. I'm mm-hmm. very attentive to deadlines. Mm-hmm. I do not like missing them. I do not like asking for extensions. I have recently gotten some because of uncontrollable life events that just made it impossible to get some work done that I was yeah. scheduled to get done, and sick family members, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's different. There are people who just don't make deadlines. What's the writer said, I love deadlines. I love the sound of them yeah, whizzing as they go by. That is just the opposite of, yes. of how I work. And I think some of that I actually really learned in theater because the deadlines in theater are not flexible. They are actually incredibly hard and inflexible. If the set drawings are not done by a certain date, the show will not have a set, right? If the costumer doesn't do their job, your actors will be naked. If your lines aren't learned by a certain rehearsal, it throws everything off. And I think that's given me a healthy anxiety. There is such a thing as healthy anxiety. It's given me a healthy anxiety about missing deadlines because always in the back of my head is how many people I'm screwing over
yeah.
if I miss them. So if I'm going to ask for an extension, I try to do it early, even mm-hmm. though it's shameful to me. And I just try to think about making those deadlines because other people's livelihoods, you know, depend on it. We had someone write into us about this, you know, a few sessions ago, works in the publishing industry. That's like, you know, if an author turns in their book 6 months late, it just throws everything off yeah. and we have to scramble to get everything done. And that's part of why books sometimes are kind of underserviced by the people who need to shepherd them to market, is because we literally don't have time.
Amen. Yeah, no, I fully agree with everything you just said. It truly, truly is important. And those people who talk about the sound of deadlines just flashing by them, I tend to think maybe they're remembering something, because I just don't see that people like that would keep getting work or keep getting contracts. That's not how life works these days.
Certainly not these days.
All right, we're going to take a break, but when we return, we'll talk about sources of accountability. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com. What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled babbel.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, listeners, Isaac Butler here. Hope you are doing well. I just wanted to take a moment to remind you that if you are enjoying the show, why don't you like click on that subscribe icon or that plus button or whatever it is on whatever your podcast app is. If you already do that and you're wondering, hey, how can I help the good folks at the good ship working. The way that you could do that is actually to rate us, leave a review, 5 stars, a check mark, a star. Again, it depends on the app, but those sorts of things actually really help us rise to the top of whatever weird algorithmic formula is serving people up their podcast. So, and the final thing you could possibly do is go to slate.com/workingplus and subscribe to Slate Plus, which gives you all sorts of goodies and helps support what we do right here on Working. All right, this has gone on long enough. Let's get back to accountability. Thank you again for listening.
And we're back. I have to say, Isaac, I understand why people find accountability appealing. Relying on a group can be very effective. That's why 12-step programs encourage people to keep coming back, turning a personal effort into a group project, making you want to avoid disappointing others, having you think about the others that your failures affects is a really effective motivational tool. And I didn't think working alone and without many check-ins was going to be a problem for me. I am pretty disciplined now, and I'm an only child and a bit of a hermit. The idea of making a date with someone to do some work has never felt particularly attractive or necessary. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized there are many other kinds of accountability that are very important to my particular workflow. First, it's about being honest with myself about how and when I'm going to get my work done and being considerate about how my work schedule affects other people in my life. For example, on some work days, I might say, oh, my brain's just not working today. I'm going to take the rest of the day off and I'll catch up on this work on the weekend. Now, by most people's standards, I have very few family responsibilities, but when I decide to work on the weekend, I'm effectively deciding the weekend plans for my partner. Isaac, you have a wife and a kid and parents who count on you for some things. So I'm sure that you would never make a schedule-changing decision about your work life on your own, but that's a kind of accountability too. Coordinating your work schedule with your family and anyone who might be counting on you to show up for something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because in some ways this is helped a little bit by being parents because on a lot of weekends we split the days down the middle. One of us takes our kid for the morning, the other for the afternoon, and then vice versa. So I can just decide, well, all my free time this weekend is going to be spent working. You know, like having those sort of blocks of whatever is helpful. But I agree. You have to be respectful of the other people in your life and you have to be caretaking of your relationships with them.
Yes.
I will say my impulse is usually to go too far in the other direction. Mm-hmm. So like I might see a residency opportunity or whatever, and then like never even mention it to Anne because I'm just sort of like, that would be so disruptive if we did it. I don't want to put her in the position of having to tell me not. I'm just going to like let that go, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
One thing she's been really great about is actually encouraging me to go out for things and to consider opportunities and be like, yeah, this might change our routine, but we are good enough at being a couple. We've been together for a long time. We can handle this. Don't worry about it. And we work really hard at figuring out our schedule. So it's complicated. It took us a lot of time and work to get it right and make it fair and all that stuff. So I am reluctant to upset the apple cart or go rogue or whatever. What happens instead, if I'm like, oh, well, I just can't work today or whatever, is it just affects whatever free time I have.
Yeah.
Once you're in a long-term relationship, and especially once a kid is involved, your free time is very precious. So compromising that is its own form of accountability, I guess.
Yeah, for real. Okay, let's talk about other places where we can find accountability. So, Isaac, I am curious if you have ever been part of a writer's group, which is obviously part of an accountability system. I'm thinking of the ones where you're expected to produce a certain amount of new work for every meeting. That's a pretty effective forcing mechanism, I imagine. I know you did an MFA, so I imagine that must have been part of that experience.
Yeah, totally. I mean, of course, with workshop and everything like that. Outside of an MFA, I have never been part of a writer's group. Ooh. I know many people who are. I've just never done it. I've thought about it, but never pulled the trigger. What I do have is I have my very good friend, Catherine Nichols, who is a genius. And when I wrote The Method, our friendship was first starting to kind of deepen, you know, like we had gone from being people who correspond to people who like are very interested in each other's lives. She's one of my closest friends now. I would send her every chapter of The Method as I finished it. So I would finish the chapter. I would do a quick let's make sure I'm not embarrassing myself here, you know, and then I would email it off and she would give me feedback. Sometimes it was really in depth. Sometimes it was like, you need to restructure this way or cut this page or whatever. And sometimes she'd literally say, here are the five things I noticed. And it would just be that. You know, there wasn't pressure on her about the feedback. Yeah, it's just she gave it to me because she gets excited about other people's work. And that was really important. And then also, when I got an extension on the book because of COVID and all that stuff, I asked my editor, hey, could I turn in the first third of the book to you? Just first of all, to put you at ease to know this is a real book that is going to exist and that I'm going to make that deadline because this is my first solo author book. And also because I actually want to know what you think of it to help shape the rest of it. And there was no submission structure like that in my contract. I just felt like I needed it. And I will probably do that again with this book, honestly. Ben, if you're listening, watch out for that. Those are the sorts of things that are really useful to me. But it is also worth saying, and I think this is a really important thing to underline here, I organized those. Yes. I did that. No one came to me and said, hey, I'd love to really help you out and keep you accountable by giving you notes on your work as it's progressing. And no one is going to do that for you, dear listener. If you want to be held accountable, you have to ask people to do it. And you just have to get over that, which can be difficult. And I recommend you listen to our Working Overtime episode about asking people for help.
Absolutely.
But seriously, you do have to just do it. You have to come up with an idea of what you need, which is going to be different for every single person. And then you actually have to go out and build it. And even though that takes a little time and you might be worried that that time is a distraction from the work and blah, 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 it'll pay off. And I highly recommend you do it.
Well, one of the things that strikes me about this, because I have never done it either in a group or even with one or two trusted individuals, although I really want to in my next project, it seems to me that it must be very, very important to only make this kind of commitment if you are really, truly serious about it. I mean, it clearly doesn't work if only one person is actually sticking with the program, right?
Yeah. You don't want to create a situation where the accountability structure itself is a source of anxiety or resentment.
Right.
If you do that, it's actually going to make you creatively blocked because then you're going to feel defiant towards the thing that is giving you anxiety and resentment. If you are in a writer's group, try to be in one where you actually like the other people and like their work and want to support them in its development. Otherwise, it just becomes an obligation. And if you're like most artists I know, obligatory things are not going to be your strong suit. And I think that's true in any kind of creative profession. Maybe you're thinking like, I have these ideas for songs. I should, you know, create a band so I have an opportunity to play these songs. Like, make sure it's with people whose tastes you align with, or else it's just going to be a miserable experience, you know?
Yeah, and you don't want to spend half the time that you have to write the songs trying to make arrangements to get together because you all can't make it. We'll be back with some final thoughts about accountability after this.
Hey, listeners, it's Isaac Butler again. I just wanted to say we really want to hear from you. This show is Working Overtime. It's every other Thursday. We offer advice on how to get creative work done. We answer people's questions. We talk about the feedback we get on this show. So please talk to us. Tell us about your challenges. Tell us about your triumphs. Tell us about what you would like us to talk about on the show. Drop us a line at working@slate.com. You can also send a voice memo to that address or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK. You can leave a voicemail there and we will feature it on the show itself. All right, now back to Working Overtime.
All right, we're back. This another kind of aspect to all of this that I wanted to mention, which is for visual artists especially, posting work online can also be a good accountability tool. I know people who wanted to get better at sketching or at using specific kinds of art materials, and for them, posting their work online has been a really effective mechanism. They wanted to get feedback. They wanted to have to create a certain amount of work. And so they set themselves a goal. And you can also see your own progress. You can get positive reinforcement or maybe constructive criticism from the people who see your work. I must admit, I can't quite think of an exact sort of equivalent of that for writers. Am I crazy, Isaac, to think that posting on social media, especially Twitter in its heyday, was a sort of an equivalent of that kind of public sharing for writers and public accountability place?
I don't know about Twitter exactly because of the length of what you could post there. Some people did use it creatively. You know, Teju Cole did these sort of 3-sentence short stories for a long time and stuff like that. Twitter was a very useful place for the posting of ideas and for having conversations about them. Sometimes those ideas would turn into things in the book or into freelance pieces. I would post an idea and an editor would write me and be like, hey, I like that idea. Is there a piece in there? You know, I actually recently found a Twitter thread where I'm musing about how to deal with the shifting definitions of method acting over time. And I say in this thread, you know, having struggled with this for a while, I think the only way to deal with it is to make the story of this shifting definition part of the book, you know, and that's exactly what I wound up doing. So clearly, you know, that was a helpful space to work things out.
Yeah.
The public facing writing that I did that I feel like is the equivalent to posting your art on Instagram or whatever was my old, now long dead blog. I think for those of us in the blogging generation, you know, we were really using that, whether we realized it or not, to learn how to be writers and to work shit out. And again, coming from a theater background, the idea of working shit out without there being an audience for it, it's like, I'm like, why would you do something if people don't see it? If people aren't giving you attention, it has no value, you know?
Yeah.
And today, I think if you're a writer and you want to do something similar, the answer is a newsletter, right? I mean, I think that sort of replaced what blogging was. I mean, you could get a live journal, I guess, if you want. Do they still have live journals? That sort of thing. But if not, I think a newsletter is the way to go.
Yeah. One final note, I just want to share an experience that I had recently because I think it kind of shows another aspect of this whole notion of accountability and how it might apply to other creative kind of experiences. I was in Athens, Georgia, giving a talk, and Wesley of Grizzly Rides, the limousine driver who took me to and from the Atlanta airport, was on a really intense entrepreneurial journey, and we talked a lot about a lot of things. It's a 2-hour ride each way. And we also talked about accountability. And I was really interested to learn that for him, accountability wasn't so much about discipline. He had that nailed down. It was about surrounding himself with successful people. As clear as he is on his strategy for his business, he found it useful to consult with his peers, to share his ideas with them, to hear their ideas. And for him, accountability, beyond his responsibility to his partner, was about finding a support network. And that feels relevant to those of us working on creative projects. It's not only about discipline and finding a structure to write, it also is about finding your people. That can really be essential in terms of finding your way.
There is a writer group chat that I'm a part of that I joined at some point during the pandemic. And, you know, it really has changed my life. I mean, it's really been very useful to have that community of support, not only to, you know, one of the channels on the forum is about what work we're doing and stuff like that. And that's useful, but also just to be like, I got this email from an editor at so-and-so asking for these edits. Like, should I push back on these edits? Am I crazy? Yeah. They seem wrong. And then getting like frank feedback. It's really, really useful. And some of the writers have 0 books out. Some of them have 1 book out. Some of them have been writing for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's a wide range of experience. And it's really nice to have all of those points of view as one tries to navigate having this career.
Wow. Amazing. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. But let me leave you with one last piece of advice. I think you should follow Working wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have any ideas for things we could do better or questions you'd like us to address, we really, really want to hear from you. Send an email to working@slate.com or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK.
If you'd like to support what we do, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/workingplus. You'll get bonus content, including exclusive episodes of Slow Burn and Decoder Ring. And you'll be supporting what we do right here on Working.
Thank you, as always, to Working Overtime's producer, Kevin Bendis, and to our series producer, Cameron Drews. I am very much accountable to them. We'll be back on Sunday with a brand new episode of Working, and in 2 weeks, we'll have another Working Overtime. Until then, get back to work.